Well, I would say happy Ash Wednesday to you, but that doesn't seem to strike the right chord, does it? So, a blessed Ash Wednesday to you, my friends. I had to do a lot of online stuff today because we had to cancel our services for the day, our Ashes to Go at noon and our 7 p.m. ecumenical Ash Wednesday service in town that we host. Because as I speak to you now, ice is literally hitting my windows in the room I'm recording, and it's been doing so all morning, and it's supposed to snow like, I don't know, a couple more inches on top of the ice, and then I think ice some more. So yay, Wisconsin is great, beautiful, lovely. I had to go get my trash cans at the end of our long driveway this morning, and it was like one of the most perilous things I've done in the last 3 years. It's like straight up an ice rink while it's icing down on top of me. It was I survived, and I didn't slip. So pat on the back for me. Anyways, I figured since I wrote some things down and did some online stuff for our church, since we couldn't do the Ash Wednesday thing, receive the ashes on our foreheads and pray together and kind of have that Kickstarter that we normally have, I thought I'd just like give some thoughts on fasting. And I know it's not a suitable replacement for my parishioners or anything like that. You know, it's nothing replaces being in person and praying with one another and the tangibleness of, like, you know, church. This doesn't replace that. Actually, this never replaces that. But, you know, this is maybe the next best thing. For those folks that are looking for just some thoughts on fasting, you know, hopefully this is helpful for you all. So I've got four thoughts on fasting, and we're just going to go with it. So number one, Jesus said these words: when you fast, not if you fast. When you fast this Lent, not if you fast this Lent. I'm just going to put that one out there, let you wrestle with it, right? Number two, so the Episcopal tradition, it makes a distinction between fasting and abstinence. When people use the word fasting or fast today, what they really mean is abstinence. So in our tradition, fasting is synonymous with moderation. To fast is to limit the intake of something, to be more mindful of how much of that something you are consuming on a daily basis or a weekly basis, whatever the case may be. So instead of completely uprooting chocolate from your life, for example, for these next several weeks, you would instead limit your intake of chocolate. That's fasting. If you abstain from chocolate, however, you're opting to cut all of the chocolate out of your life for good during this season. That's abstinence. Both angles of approach are totally legit. They are both in keeping with the spirit of Lent. And I imagine that discovering the true definition of what it means to fast, this might actually be really liberating for some people, right? Cutting something completely out of your life can be incredibly difficult, psychologically speaking, right? So there's some looseness to here to what it means to fast and how to observe a holy Lent. But there are some of us, right? Some of us really do need to weed something out during this season because that thing has become a crutch or a coping mechanism for us. And I'll talk more about this in the last point. So whatever you decide to do this Lent, the point of Lent isn't your fasting or your abstaining. The point isn't our sacrifice. It's all about Christ's sacrifice. So like, do the thing that's going to open your heart the most to his presence. Don't do the thing that's going to cause you to focus the spotlight on your own Lenten accomplishments, right? Make sense? Good, got it. Point number three, a story. One of my favorite saints in the Eastern Orthodox Church is a modern saint, Saint Silouan the Athenite. Had a huge impact on me about 10, 15 years ago on my spirituality. Lingers still today, actually. So not too long after Saint Silouan became a monk, he was afflicted by demons. That's what happens to all the great saints. These demons appeared in his room each evening, and they tried to distract him as he prayed the Jesus prayer and other prayers, right? Now, whether or not you're somebody who believes in the presence of like literal demons, real demons, or whether or not you believe that demons are just like the dark aspects of our psyche coming to the surface, like it doesn't really matter. I wish people would just get beyond such, you know, dichotomies and think more deeply about things. But here we are, modern American Christianity being what it is. You know, personally, I'm on the side of Carl Jung on this one. Like, both the reality of literal demons and the reality of like the demonic psyche, they're probably both true at the same time. We don't have to pick either or. And honestly, like the demonic and the psychological are greater mysteries than we tend to think they are. We just kind of dumb things down and then discard one side of the, anyways, I can rant about that. That's not the point. You know, did Silouan battle demons outside of himself or his own inner demons? You know, how about both are true and far more mysterious than we tend to think. So as Silouan reached out to God in prayer, as he was being afflicted, a phrase suddenly filled his heart and his mind one evening. And as he meditated on it, he was suddenly liberated from this dark presence all around him and within him, and he was never afflicted again. And the phrase was this: keep your mind in hell and despair not. It's not the most, happy phrase out there, but actually there's a lot of wisdom to it. Because there are times in life, my friends, when we really do need to keep our minds in hell. And however you want to define hell here, again, it doesn't really matter. Like, it really doesn't matter. Silouan for sure was not a, you know, fundamentalist Western Christian. He was Eastern Orthodox, and the Orthodox tend to view hell more as a state of mind and state of heart as opposed to like a literal place with like demons and pitchforks and shit like that, right? So, you know, however you want to define hell, it doesn't matter. You know, just what matters is realizing that there are times in life when we need to realize that we are not above hell, that we are not as perfect as we'd like to think that we are, and that we need to become painfully, painfully aware of our own flaws. And this is especially true if we are in the habit of looking down on other people and all of their flaws. That's when we really need to keep our mind in hell and humble ourselves below everybody else. However, with that said, right, keep thy mind in hell, your mind in hell, and despair not. One of Silouan's disciples, Saint Sophroni, also known as Elder Sophroni, listened one day as he heard a priest prescribing this formula to one of his parishioners, right, long after Silouan had died. And this priest told this woman to keep her mind in hell and despair not. The problem was that her whole life up to that point had pretty much been hell. Like, she had been broken and beaten down by life and just trampled, neglected, and just suffered tremendously. She didn't need more hell. She needed to unlearn all of her despair. So Sophroni chided this priest, and rightfully so, for prescribing this formula in such a blind and unpastoral and uncompassionate way. It doesn't work all across the board equally with every single person, right? You have to customize things for people. So the point, yes, like sometimes people really do need to be humbled. And there are times in life where we really do need to be humbled because we think too highly of ourselves. We need to keep our minds in hell, right? Other times, though, people need to be lifted up. And the point is that some of us, as we enter into this Lent, we really do need practices that's going to completely break down our pride and humble us. Practices such as fasting and abstinence, the stuff we've been talking about all along. Others of us, however, we need to do things that will build us back up again, that will open our hearts to love and grace again so that we can genuinely learn how to despair not. And this needs to be our form of fasting and abstinence. What we need to do is fast and abstain from all of those negative things that pull us down into our negativity, and instead we need to focus on things like self-care practices, such as healthy eating or meditation or exercise, things like that, right? And for many of us, that will be our form of fasting, even though we're not taking something really out physically out of our lives, like chocolate or beer or whatever it is, coffee, right? Even though we're not taking those things out, We're trying to remove the negativity so we can open our hearts to love again. And if we need to put some positive practices in there, if we need to add things to our lives during this season, that's the thing we need to do. Because again, it's all about opening our hearts and our minds and our lives to God's presence. Whatever we need to do to get there, that's a holy Lent. Make sense? Good. Point number four, and my final point. Many people today have just like the most incorrect perception of fasting possible. And they see it as being something akin to like self-hatred or self-loathing or hatred of the body, like stuff like that. It's not about that. It's not at all about that. Lent is about remembering that one day we will die. And this is a thought that most of us evade most of the time. Fasting, abstinence, whatever you want to call it, let's just conflate it for a second. Fasting is mainly the practice of remembering that we will die. You see, most of us, when we're faced with the thought of death, or our own mortality, our fragility, our brokenness, and the imperfections of this life, instead of turning to God, we first turn to coping mechanisms, crutches, right? We tend to drink or to eat our sorrows away. We distract ourselves with screens, right? Porn and video games and TV, all sorts of things. Whatever we lean into to distract ourselves from pain, you know, that's the coping mechanism. That's the crutch. And Lent and fasting, it's about pulling all of those coping mechanisms up by the root so that we could relearn how to place our faith and our trust in God more so than we do in these things that only provide temporary distraction and satisfaction. And we realize that the happiness that's gleaned from these things, it's short-lived, whereas the joy that God provides is eternal. So we fast not because we hate our bodies or even these particular things even, right, that we lean into too much. We fast because we've developed a deeper union with them than we have with God, and we need to find a way to put things back into their proper balance again. That's why we fast. That's why we observe Lent. That's the heart of it, right? We look to the cross and remember not just that Jesus died for us, but that also we will die and we need to do something about it, and Christ has given us a way, right? That's what it's about. With that said, let us pray. O Lord and Master of my life, give me not the spirit of sloth, despair, lust for power, or idle talk, but grant unto me a spirit of integrity, humility, patience, and love. Grant me to see my own faults and not judge another. For blessed are you unto the ages of ages. Amen.